Welcome to episode 190 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast for the week of May 21, 2012. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. In this week's episode of the Fredcast, a theft ring targets cyclists via Craigslist, new reproductive health warnings for male cyclists, an update to a previous story about a man killed while riding a recalled Cervelo bicycle, announcements of 2012's bike-friendly cities and states, and a police bike is stolen in Honolulu. In pro cycling news, the Tour de Romandie, the Amgen Tour of California, the Giro d'Italia, and the U.S. Pro Cycling Championships. Following the news, a listener reports on CarTop Alert app for Android. All this and more, plus PodSafe cycling music. All this on this week's episode of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder because here comes the Fredcast. Hey, fellow Freds, welcome back to another episode of the Fredcast. Great to have you here with us. There's a lot going on in the world of cycling. And by the way, if you're only listening to the Fredcast, you're only getting a part of the story. Make sure you're listening to the Spokesman Cycling Roundtable podcast. We do that every other week on Saturdays, and you can find that at www.the-spokesmen.com. If you're not listening, you're going to want to. So go ahead and take a listen. Again, you can find it at www.the-spokesmen.com. We just finished another episode of The Spokesman. I think you will really enjoy it. So go check that out. I'll make sure to put a link in the show notes to that as well. Now, before we get started with this week's episode of the Fredcast, I do need to thank our show sponsor, Jensen USA, at jensenusa.com/thefredcast. I've told you many times that jensenusa.com offers an incredible selection of products at amazing prices with unparalleled customer service. And this weekend is going to be even better when you go shopping at jensenusa.com/thefredcast because it's Memorial Day here in the States, and that means it's time for Jensen USA's annual Memorial Day sale with hundreds of products marked down below their already low prices on Jensen USA. I saw wheels, tires, handlebars, seat posts, complete bikes, all of this. You name it, tires, tubes, anything that you're going to need for your cycling adventures this summer. I found them there at amazing prices. I saw some up to 60% off. I saw a Fuji complete road bike at an unparalleled price. I want you to go ahead and check it out. So go to thefredcast.com and click the Jensen USA link on the right-hand side of the page, or just go to jensenusa.com/thefredcast and check out the amazing selection of products and incredible prices being offered during the jensenusa.com Memorial Day sale. You will not be sorry you went there today. So go check it out, jensenusa.com/thefredcast, or go to thefredcast.com and click the Jensen USA link on the right-hand side of the page. As always, we thank Jensen USA for their support of the Fredcast, and we thank you for your support of Jensen USA. Topping the news this week is a story out of Southern California about a ring of bicycle thieves who were using the internet and social media to target the homes of cyclists in order to steal their high-end bicycles. Now, you can imagine you're in the situation where you are interested in selling your high-end bicycle. Say it's a Pinarello or an Orbea or a Colnago. As the stories in the LA Times and other places have noted, for most people, definitely not for listeners of this show, but for most people, those names could be the names of a pasta dish or the last name of somebody down the street. But you and I know that those are the names of high-end bicycles. And what this group of bicycle thieves was doing was trolling websites such as Craigslist for cyclists who were selling their high-end bicycles, giving them a call, chatting up the bicyclist, learning a little bit more about maybe what other bicycles they might have, where they live, where they like to ride, setting up appointments to go view and test ride those bikes, and then not showing up. And then a few days or weeks later, showing up in the middle of the night, breaking into the cyclists' garages and homes and stealing those high-end bicycles. At the end of the day, the three men arrested are responsible for the theft over 2 years of more than 200 expensive bikes with an estimated total value of $250,000. According to the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department's Major Crimes Bureau, they arrested three men, Julian Herrera, Jamie Herrera, and Alberto Mejia, who face dozens of counts of burglary and conspiracy after the Sheriff's Department found stolen bikes and bike parts at a variety of locations around Southern California, including at one of the homes of one of the suspects. Now, while this particular theft ring has been operating for about 2 years, according to the Los Angeles Police Department, two of the suspects in this case were arrested in 2011 after a series of high-end bicycle thefts in Brentwood, the Pacific Palisades, and Santa Monica, basically on the west side of Los Angeles. Both of those men were arrested. They were both convicted, along with Herrera's uncle, Marvin. They were released after just a few weeks in jail, and it was a short time thereafter that this latest theft ring started up. And while this case had been reported to authorities time after time after time from victims whose bikes had been stolen, it was only a lucky break that allowed them to catch these three individuals. In early March, an off-duty sheriff sergeant was leaving his home in the Santa Clarita Valley at about 4 o'clock in the morning when he noticed three men drive by in a car with bikes on the bike rack on top. He was suspicious of this, took down the license plate number, and after a few days, the sergeant was talking to one of the neighbors in his neighborhood who told him that his bikes had been stolen out of his garage. He then called sheriff's detectives. They linked the car to the suspects. And bam, these guys were arrested. Now, parenthetically, I used to volunteer at the Santa Clarita Sheriff's Department, so I'm really pleased to hear that it was one of my guys who was able to get this theft ring broken up. This is really, really good news. Now, listen, we talked about this on The Spokesman, not on this week's show, but 2 weeks ago. And Donna Tosi, who used to be in marketing and social media at Kryptonite. You all know Kryptonite. That's the famous lock company in the bicycle industry. Gave us a lot of great tips about how to keep your bike safe. And I think one of them is something that I had done just a few days before we talked about this on The Spokesman. I was selling an old iMac. And once I found somebody who was interested in buying it, and yes, I found them on Craigslist, instead of meeting them at my home, I met them at a coffee shop, a public location where they would have no idea where I lived, no idea whether or not I had bikes in my garage or other computers in my house or any other valuables. I didn't want them to know where I lived. And I think when it comes to bikes, it's another really good idea. Don't give people your address. Don't give them more information than they need to know. Certainly don't let them know where to find you on places like Facebook and Twitter, where they can get more information about you and your family and where you live and what other belongings that might be attractive to them if they are ne'er-do-wells. Now, certainly I'm not advocating that you're suspicious of everybody out there, because that would be kind of a tough world to live in if we were all suspicious of everybody that we came in contact with. But what I am saying is be careful, be smart, and if you're going to sell something like a bicycle, make sure you meet somebody in a neutral location, and certainly before you allow them to take off on a test ride, make sure that either you're going with them, that you can keep them within sight, or take their driver's license and a credit card, or maybe their car keys. Nothing against them personally, but there have been way too many incidents like this. You don't want to lose a bike that you're trying to sell. Now, having said that, if you are a bike thief and somebody comes to test ride a bike, by all means, allow them to test ride the bike. Don't take their driver's license or credit card or their car keys. Just let them take the bike. Here's why I'm saying that. In a bit of turnabout is fair play, a man in Washington, D.C. by the name of Danny Lesh loaned his bike to a friend of his. It was an old Cannondale. He loaned it to a buddy. His buddy locked up the bike with a cable lock, and a thief with some bolt cutters, stole the bike. Next thing you know, Danny is cruising on Craigslist and finds a bike that sounds very familiar. As a matter of fact, it sounds exactly like the bike that was stolen, the one that he had lent to his friend. So what did he do? Well, like any good citizen, he contacted the police. And unfortunately, the police said that they couldn't respond right away. So Danny was a little bit concerned that this bike was going to disappear into the hands of a legitimate buyer. So he contacted the quote-unquote seller, arranged a meeting, looked over the bike, realized that absolutely this was his bicycle, told the seller he was going to take it for a test ride, and then took off and never came back. Now, the purported seller, while Lesh was riding away on the bike, kept calling him, wondering when he was coming back. Lesh never answered the phone and instead rode all the way home, where he opened up his computer, went on Craigslist, and posted his own ad, warning others about this seller and letting them know that this was a bicycle thief. Now, clearly, Washington, D.C. police or any police officer will tell you, don't do this yourself. It is never a good idea to get into a situation where you are confronting someone who is quite obviously a criminal. However, according to Mr. Lesh, quote, this is what he told NBC, quote, I couldn't help feeling bad for all the other people he'd stolen bikes from. I'm glad that hopefully his business is interrupted a little bit. So good for you, Mr. Lesh. That definitely took some cojones. I'm glad that you're safe. I'm glad you got your bike safe. And I'm glad you were able to make the warning to others in Washington, D.C. And coincidentally, while we're talking about bike thefts and the dangers associated with getting our bikes back, there's a company out of Brooklyn, New York called MyAssetTag.com. Now, you've seen these tags on a lot of different items before. If you've maybe been in a university or a major corporation, you've seen these tags with serial numbers on everything from furniture to vehicles to appliances, to computers. And typically these are used by corporations to help maintain their inventory of their assets. And that's what My Asset Tag is all about. Well, now MyAssetTag.com has created Bike Guard, which is a free bike registry and identification program. And yes, I said free. What the new service is going to do is it's going to provide free asset tags so that you can track and identify the ownership of your bicycles. Now, according to My Asset Tag, the FBI's Uniform Crime Report says that nearly 180,000 bike thefts were recorded in the United States in 2010, while some estimates indicate that more than 1 million bike thefts go unreported each year. And unfortunately, when police departments recover stolen bicycles, they're not always able to return them to the rightful owners because all they really have is the serial number of the bike and there's no registry that they can refer to. And as a result, My Asset Tag created Bike Guard as a community service initiative to offer free registration and ID tags to you. According to Rivka Fogel, manager of MyAssetTag.com and creator of Bike Guard, quote, our company is based in Brooklyn, and many of our employees are bikers. I hate that term biker, by the way, Rivka. So we understand how dependent cyclists are on their bikes and how costly and annoying it is to replace them. It was a natural step for us to leverage our asset tags, which are typically used to organize inventory, as a means of cataloging bikes and identifying ownership. Participants can rest secure in the knowledge that their bikes are registered in an international database and are personally identifiable through their Bike Guard asset tags. So here's how it works. You can go to myassettag.com/bike, and yes, there's a link in the show notes. You can create a free account and put in details for your bike, make, model, year, serial number, upload a photo, and that generates a unique personal bicycle registration page, and that displays your contact info and the details of your registered bike. Then from there, you are eligible to receive 3 free Bike Guard asset tags, and these tags are very durable and are also very difficult to remove, and these are used for tracking and ID purposes. So presumably, if your bike was stolen, anyone with a smartphone can then scan the QR code, the quick response code that's on these asset tags, get information on how to contact you so that they can be sure that this bike that maybe they just found, on Craigslist, is actually the property of the person from whom they're trying to buy it, or perhaps it's your stolen bike. I think this is a great idea. I love the fact that they're doing this for free. And as they said, that they're leveraging their technology, both in database, and the ubiquity thereof, and in their asset tags. So go ahead and check it out. There is a link in the show notes. I think this is a wonderful idea in light of the couple of stories that we just talked about. I think that the timing is absolutely right. Go ahead and check it out. Here's some potential good news for cyclists in the state of California. You'll recall that last year here on the Fredcast, I reported on the fact that Governor Jerry Brown vetoed a 3-foot safe passing bill because he felt that its requirement that motorists slow to 15 miles per hour in order to pass cyclists was going to create safety, traffic, and enforcement problems. Well, understanding the governor's concerns, Senator Alan Lowenthal, a Democrat from the city of Long Beach, California, has put together a new 3-foot passing rule that removes a 15-mile-per-hour requirement, instead requiring motorists to slow to a, quote, reasonable speed, unquote. And as a result, the California State Senate on Friday approved that bill and sent it along to the state assembly for a vote. This is California Senate Bill 1464, allowing motorists to cross a solid yellow line between traffic if it is safe to do so and necessary to give bicyclists a 3-foot buffer. Drivers who pass too close would face an infraction and a $35 fine. But after all court fees and surcharges are added in, that would end up totaling $233. Now, the fine would be $220 with a total including court fees of $959 if a collision results in bodily injury to the cyclist. I'm not sure I'm real fond of that part. I think if there's bodily injury to the cyclist, I think somebody should be quite frankly, I think that they should be subject to more than a $1,000 penalty. Anyway, the measure passed 27-6 with some Republicans in opposition and has now gone on to the assembly where it will go to committee and then to the full assembly for vote. Once they vote on it, if they vote in favor, I'm sure that there'll be a conference committee to put the two bills together and then hopefully it will be sent along to Governor Brown for his signature. I will, of course, keep you posted. There have been a lot of studies over the last few years, indeed over the last few decades, on the impact of cycling on male reproductive health. You'll recall the last couple of shows we talked about a study on female reproductive health, but there's a new study out from the UCLA School of Nursing. And they start out by making it very clear that there's a lot of positive that comes from long-term exercise, such as cycling, enhanced cardiovascular health, better metabolic function, reduced body fat, better endurance, all of those kinds of things that we know are positive effects that come from long-term aerobic exercise like cycling. This study from the UCLA School of Medicine looked at the association between exercise intensity and the levels of reproductive hormones in serious, what they called leisure male athletes. And they specifically looked at triathletes and cyclists, as well as recreational athletes. Now, in this study, they studied 107 healthy male athletes aged 18 to 60, and they divided them into three groups. 16 were triathletes, 46 were cyclists, and 45 were recreational athletes. And throughout the study, they were taking blood samples from each participant to measure total levels of the following hormones: testosterone, estradiol, cortisol, interleukin-6, and a few other hormones as well. Now, according to School of Nursing Assistant Professor Leah Fitzgerald, the study's senior author, quote, plasma estradiol and testosterone levels were significantly elevated in serious leisure male athletes, serious leisure male cyclists, a finding not previously reported in any type of male athlete, unquote. The concentrations of plasma estradiol were more than 2 times higher in cyclists than in the triathletes and the recreational athletes, and total testosterone levels were about 50% higher in cyclists than in recreational athletes. According to Dr. Fitzgerald, these effects were accompanied by little or no compensatory shift in circulating reproductive hormone levels. What does this mean? Well, if you've never heard of estradiol, and knowing me, I'm probably mispronouncing it, I hadn't heard of it either. It's a form of estrogen. Let me say that again. It's a form of estrogen. That's the female hormone, and it's produced in males as an active metabolic product of testosterone. Now, possible conditions associated with an elevated estrogen in men include something called gynecomastia, which can result in the loss of male pubic hair and enlarged breast tissue. Now, the bottom line of the study, these findings are preliminary, and the UCLA School of Nursing is suggesting that further study is necessary in order to determine the cause and effect of all of this, including whether or not the altered sex hormone levels in men could affect their general health and reproductive well-being. This is according to Dr. Fitzgerald. Here's something that was also interesting in the study. So, of course, I'll keep you posted if anything else comes out in the next few months and years. But in the meantime, there was something else that was very interesting that came out of the study. The study found that there is an association between an increase in estrogen levels in men and the use of chamois cream, particularly for male cyclists who have used chamois cream for more than 4 years. Now, they haven't found the direct cause and effect relationship. However, it is interesting to note that they found that this was a factor in the raised estrogen levels in male cyclists. So a couple of very interesting things going on here. Some interesting preliminary findings. I will keep you posted if anything else comes out. I don't think that anyone is necessarily suggesting that you stop cycling. I don't think anyone is necessarily suggesting that you stop the use of chamois cream, but I think it's important that you have the knowledge and we'll keep you posted if anything else comes up in the future. Now, on a previous episode of the Fredcast, I told you the unfortunate story of Gary Lanui, age 58, from Rehoboth, Massachusetts, who died in a bicycle accident recently on a specific model of Cervelo bicycle that had been the subject of a product recall. And the initial suspicion was whether or not the death of Mr. Lanui was directly associated to the fact that the bike that he was riding was recalled and whether or not the breakage of his fork was the condition that the bike was recalled for. Now, if you remember that story, I was careful to indicate that it was unclear as to whether or not this was the cause of Mr. Lanui's fatal injuries. Well, it turns out that during the investigation, two Cervelo representatives went from Toronto, Canada, down to Rehoboth, Massachusetts to take a look at the bicycle involved in the case, to inspect Mr. Lanui's bicycle. And what they reported was that the fork that was on Mr. Lanui's bicycle at the time of the accident was not a model that had ever been subject to a recall, and therefore that it was not the proximate cause of Mr. Lanui's accident or the cause of the injury. And while in this case, there was a broken steer tube on the fork, Cervelo had never had a previous reported breakage involving this model fork, the FK03, and as a result, it looks like this was not a case of Mr. Lanui simply not knowing about a product recall. It was simply an unfortunate and very tragic accident. Okay, but we do have a couple of product recalls tonight, new product recalls, and I will be brief, as I promised that I would. The first is from Salsa Cycles. These are the minimalist bike racks. These were sold in retail stores nationwide and on internet retailers from January 2011 through March 2012 for about $80. The problem here is that Salsa has received two reports of bike racks breaking at the mounting straps, resulting in minor injuries from falls. So those are the Salsa minimalist bike racks. The second and final product recall this week is from Ridley. And by the way, on the Salsa, there are about 1,100 of those racks sold. Here, these are the Ridley 4Z or 4ZA threadless carbon bike handlebar stems. In this case, only about 105 of them were sold, and again, sold at specialty bike retailers and via websites from January 2005 through April 2010 for about $59. And the problem here is that they've received one report of a handlebar stem breaking, resulting in minor injuries. Now, in the case of both of these product recalls, I do have links in the show notes. So just go to thefredcast.com and go to the individual post for show number 190, and you can click the links. It'll take you right to the Consumer Product Safety Commission's website for each of the recalls with more information on which specific models, how to identify which models they are and whether or not you have them, and how to get your problem rectified. Every year about this time, Bicycling Magazine comes out with their new list of 50 best cycling cities in the United States. Also around this time, the League of American Bicyclists comes out with their list of bike-friendly states in the United States. And somewhere between the fall and spring every year, IMBA announces new official ride centers. So I always have trouble deciding whether or not and how I'm going to report on these lists because, and now I'm going to be completely honest with you here, when I see these lists, I don't know, they make me kind of dubious. I read through the lists. Give you an example. Look, here's Bicycling Magazine's 50 best cycling cities list for 2012. Number one, Portland. Number two, Minneapolis. Number three, Boulder. And those three always seem to be in these kinds of lists. Number four, D.C. I've told you I've ridden in Washington, D.C. and found that it's been a pleasurable place to ride. But then you go down the list a little bit. All right, Madison is there. That makes sense. Eugene is there. That makes sense. Seattle. I got to ask you, seriously. What are San Francisco, Chicago, and New York City doing on this list? I have ridden my bike in San Francisco and felt, how do I put this gently, fellow native Californians, unsafe. I've never ridden a bike in Chicago, but I've never felt like it looked like the safest place in the world to do so. And New York City, well, forget about it. Really? You're not getting me on a bicycle in the middle of Metropolis. Now, this comes from somebody who spent 41 years of his life in Southern California, in and around the city of Los Angeles. I have ridden all over Los Angeles, from far north LA County on country, rural roads, all the way into downtown and south central Los Angeles on some of the most congested and in some cases potholed roads that I've seen anywhere else in the country. And quite frankly, I felt like I didn't feel safe. And it's not the kind of place where I felt it was incredibly friendly towards cyclists. Although admittedly, Los Angeles is getting better. But New York City, really? Have you seen the traffic in Manhattan? Is that really someplace that should be on that list? So these lists tend to make me a little bit dubious. Now, according to the editors of Bicycling Magazine from Rodale Publications, they say as part of their ranking process, they evaluate cities with populations of 95,000 or more, using data provided by the League of American Bicyclists, we'll get to them next, and the Alliance for Biking and Walking. And they initiate hundreds, quote unquote, of interviews with cycling experts in cities across the country, including government officials, because we all know that they know so much about cycling, bike pedestrian coordinators, advocates, and local enthusiasts, such as bike shop owners, because they have nothing to gain by saying that their city is cycling friendly, and cycling club members. The result is what Bicycling says is the most, quoting now, comprehensive, in-depth rankings to date with, again, I'm still quoting, insightful data and anecdotes on each city. Okay, let's move on. The League of American Bicyclists, they come out with their list of bicycle-friendly states. Now, again, if you're not an American, states can be quite large, like California or Texas or Ohio or New York, or they could be quite small, like Rhode Island, for instance. And they can be incredibly varied, like here in Utah, where we have one major city and much of the rest of the state is rural. All right, let's take a look at their list of top 10 bicycle-friendly states. In order, Washington, Minnesota, Massachusetts, Colorado, Oregon, Wisconsin, New Jersey, Maryland, Maine, and Delaware. Utah, I think, came in number 13, by the way. The bottom five, Montana, Alabama, West Virginia, North Dakota, Arkansas. Now, according to the league, they rank all 50 states for bicycle friendliness based on a, quoting now, multifaceted bicycle-friendly state questionnaire. That's the BFS questionnaire, in case you were wondering, that's answered by each state's bicycle coordinator. The data collected based on 56 questions across five categories is verified by league staff in concert with advocates in each state. States that continue to promote bicycling and improve conditions can expect to improve their scores. I'm going fast on purpose here. Our BFS annual ranking measures to the best of our degree the state's bicycle friendliness, but does not include everything states can and should do for bicycling. It is primarily designed to establish best practices for others to follow, as every state has great riding opportunities, dedicated state agency staff, determined advocates, and cyclists of all stripes working to make a great state for cycling, unquote. In other words, we're going to give you our ranking, but it's meaningless because, let me go back to their words again, every state has great riding opportunities, dedicated state agency staff, determined advocates, and cyclists of all stripes working to make a great state for cycling. Bottom line, as I read these, to my mind, they're meaningless. I think that Bicycling Magazine could probably spend their time a lot better in a lot of other ways that might have more meaning to cyclists and to cycling advocacy. And I think that the money that people spend on their membership in the League of American Bicyclists could be better spent than on putting together this bicycle-friendly state questionnaire with 56 questions and instead work for cycling advocacy and improving access and safety for cyclists of all abilities and of all types, be they commuters, roadies, all the way to BMXers and mountain bikers. I just don't find that these lists are of any value. And so every year when they come out, I wonder, should I be reporting on these lists? So I'm going to leave this one to you. Is this something you want to hear about? Is this something that you find value in? Do you believe these lists? What do you get out of these lists? Maybe you are a bicycle coordinator in your city or state, official or unofficial. Maybe you own a bike shop in one of these cities or states that's at the top or even at the bottom of the list. I want to hear from you. I want to know, do you believe that these lists and the amount of time and money and effort that goes into making them provides value and guidance? Or do you believe that as so far I have, that these are essentially meaningless and this will be the last time you'll hear about them on the Fredcast? Please feel free to send me an email. Feel free to call the Fredcast listener hotline. As a matter of fact, I'd love to put your voice on the air and let your fellow Fredcast listeners know what you think, positive or negative, about these lists. As for me, unless I hear from you, this is probably the last time you're going to hear about them here on the show. Now, having gone on that tirade, please don't think that that means that I think that everything the League of American Bicyclists does is worthless. I don't. I really have a lot of respect, admiration, and appreciation for the League of American Bicyclists. And they've just done something that really bolsters my feeling about the League of American Bicyclists. They've just launched what they call the Every Bicyclist Counts website. And yes, of course, there's a link in the show notes. According to the League of American Bicyclists, more than 700 cyclists are killed in traffic crashes every year in the United States. And they created the Every Bicyclist Counts website as a place to honor those cyclists and ensure not only that their death is not in vain, but that it is a memorial place and a gathering place and a home for everyone who has lost a friend or a family member on their bicycle on the road. If you will, it's a place on the internet for ghost bikes and for an expansion of the stories of those who have been killed on the road and kind of a year-long Ride of Silence, which we just had just a few weeks ago. And it is going to capture all U.S. cycling deaths starting from January 1, 2012. And if you go to the site, what you'll find is a Google map indicating a little bike icon in each location where a cyclist has lost their life so far since January 1, 2012. And when you click on that little bicycle, it will bring up the name of the individual. And if you click that, you'll get a little bit of bio and a little history of what happened. And they're also tracking the legal ramifications as a result of the case. It really is a wonderful memorial, but it's besides being a memorial and a tribute, it is also a place where you can learn about fatal bike crashes, about the circumstances involved, hopefully helping to improve safety for all of us as we become, as we gain a better understanding of what happens. Hopefully it will enhance our safety. And it also gives us a place to really improve on how these are reported and make sure that they're reported from the right perspective, certainly from the perspective of fellow cyclists. It's really a great idea. I want to commend the League of American Bicyclists for doing this. So go ahead and check it out. I've got a link in the show notes. Again, show number 190. Go ahead and check out Every Bicyclist Counts. And while we're talking about bike accidents, fortunately, not all bike accidents are fatal. But when you are involved in an accident on your bike or in your car, or anytime you're involved in a traumatic event, sometimes your adrenaline gets going and you forget all of the different things that you need to jot down, all of the information that you need to collect so that you can follow up later. And a group in New York called NewYorkBikeLawyer.com has created a new app for your smartphone, iPhone or Android, that will help you in gathering all of that necessary data after you have an accident, including driver and vehicle owner's names, insurance information, witness information, responding police officer's name, report number, precinct. It also geotags the accident location, helps you to take photos of the accident scene and the vehicles, record witness statements, offer a sketch pad, and it's just a wonderful little repository that you can use if you have the unfortunate circumstance of being involved in an accident on your bicycle. It was recently released into both the Android marketplace and the iTunes App Store. It is absolutely free, and I have links in the show notes, so go ahead and check it out. Put it on your phone. Forget that it's there. Hopefully, you'll never need to use it, but if you ever do have the need, it's there for you and will help make things a lot easier for you in collecting data. Go ahead and check it out. It's in the show notes for this week's show. And closing out the general news portion of the show today, and perhaps appropriately, since we began with a story about bike theft, we're going to end with a story about bike theft, but this one with a little bit of a twist. It turns out that a bicycle was stolen from a Waikiki establishment in the city of Honolulu about a week or so ago at about 9:30 a.m. on a Monday morning. The bicycle stolen was valued at over $300. The suspect, a 28-year-old man, was found in the area with the stolen bicycle, and he was arrested for second-degree theft. Doesn't sound like much of a story or something that I should even be reporting here on the Fredcast, except I left a word out of the first sentence. It was an unattended Honolulu Police Department bicycle was stolen from a Waikiki establishment, according to a police report. So this was a police bike that was left unattended, and this 28-year-old man decided that that would be a good bike for him to steal. Not a great idea. Now, while he may not have been very intelligent about stealing the police bike, I want to read to you some of the bicycle safety tips from the Honolulu Police Department's bicycle safety tips portion of their website. Things like wear clothes that make you more visible. Be cautious when riding a bike at night. Make sure you have the proper lights on your bike. Wear reflective materials or clothing. Wear a helmet. Secure loose items. Obey traffic signs, signals, and road markings. Be familiar with laws pertaining to bicycles. And one more. protect against bike theft. Most bikes stolen are not locked. What is it they say? Physician, heal thyself. Law enforcement, protect thyself. Well, let's move on to a little professional cycling news. When last we spoke, the next race up was the Tour de Romandie, the six-day race in Switzerland. This year's race was won by Bradley Wiggins, who won after winning the last stage individual time trial. Even though he had early mechanical trouble, he was able to come in 28 minutes, 56 seconds in the 10 and a quarter mile circuit around the ski resort of Crans-Montana. He was 1 second faster than Andrew Talansky of the United States, who climbed to second overall in the general classification, trailing Brad Wiggins by just 12 seconds. Third overall in the GC was Rui Costa of Portugal, 30 seconds behind Brad Wiggins after coming in fourth place in the individual time trial. Now, going into that individual time trial, that last stage of the Tour de Romandie, Luis Leon Sanchez of Spain was 9 seconds ahead of Brad Wiggins, but it was Brad Wiggins' superiority in the time trial on that day which enabled him to win the general classification and tumbled Luis Leon Sanchez all the way down to 10th overall in the general classification. Next up on the calendar was the Tour of California. Pardon me, I have to say this correctly. The Amgen Tour of California. Now, I remember in 2007, this fresh-faced young man from the Netherlands winning the young rider classification. We were at the time calling him Robert Gesink. It's Robert Hesink, we've now learned. And then in 2008, this same young man takes 9th overall in the Tour of California and once again takes the best young rider classification. So we thought, this is a guy that we should definitely watch. Well, clearly this was a guy that we should definitely watch, because in the 2012 edition of the Amgen Tour of California, on the final day, on the final podium, wearing the golden jersey of the winner of the general classification in the Amgen Tour of California, it was that same young man who won the best young rider classification 2 years in a row, Robert Hesink, winning the Amgen Tour of California in 30 hours, 42 minutes, and 32 seconds. Making it perhaps even more impressive is the fact that Hesink won just 8 months after breaking his leg in a training accident. Also, perhaps making it more impressive, is the fact that the final stage of the Amgen Tour of California, going through, well, my old stomping grounds, all the way from Beverly Hills through LA and Hollywood, all the way down to LA Live, where it took a couple of circuits around the downtown area. It was about a 43-mile race from Beverly Hills to downtown LA. That final stage was won by Peter Sagan, or Sagan, of Slovakia, in whom we've been so impressed each year of the past couple of years in the Amgen Tour of California. That final leg, the final stage, was won by Peter Sagan, and it was his fifth stage that he won in this year's Amgen Tour of California. Now, Peter Sagan also has quite a history at the Tour of California. Peter Sagan taking best young rider in 2010, the points classification in 2010, winning stages 5 and 6 in 2010, winning stage 5 in 2011, and the points classification in 2011. Now, Peter Sagan definitely causing some heartache for Heinrich Hausler. Sagan winning the first four stages of the event, Hausler taking second in all four of those stages as well. Another story going into this year's Amgen Tour of California, well, two as a matter of fact, how would defending champion Chris Horner do in this year's Tour of California? The answer coming, finishing sixth in the seventh stage, but not doing very well in the time trial. Chris Horner finishing eighth in the general classification. The other big story going into the Amgen Tour of California this year was Levi Leipheimer. This was his first race since his serious leg fracture in a training accident earlier in the season. This was his first race back, and the question was he really in any shape to ride on the one hand? And on the other hand, was Levi really sandbagging, and was he going to try to come back and win the race? Leipheimer doing very respectably, coming in sixth in the general classification, 2 minutes, 13 seconds back, and finishing second in the general classification yet again, although this year winning the individual time trial. Dave Zabriskie from Garmin Barracuda, 46 seconds back of Hesink. So rounding out the top 10, Robert Hesink, Dave Zabriskie, Tom Danielson, TJ Van Garderen, Fabio Andres Duarte Arevalo from Colombia, Levi Leipheimer, Wilco Kelderman, who, by the way, looked great going into that stage as they were finishing around Big Bear Lake. Also, Chris Horner in eighth, Thiago Machado in ninth, and in 10th place, Peter Wiening from the Orica Green Edge cycling team, just 3 minutes, 5 seconds back of race winner Robert Hesink. A final story from this year's Amgen Tour of California was the retirement of 39-year-old Australian Robbie McEwen, finishing a 17-year professional cycling career that included winning 12 stages of the Tour de France and three green jerseys, 12 stages of the Giro d'Italia, 2 stages of Paris-Nice, 12 stages of the Tour Down Under, and the Palmares go on and on. The final stage of the Amgen Tour of California was Robbie McEwen's last. McEwen quoted at the end of the race as saying, quote, "It's a little bit surreal. Crossing the line, I felt like, ooh, I'm finished. I'm still going. I just want to go back to the hotel, have a shower, sit down, have a cold beer, and think. All right, maybe it'll hit me when I don't have to pack a suitcase for the next race. That's something I'm honestly looking forward to. I've had a great career." And indeed, McEwen has had a great career, but his career continues as he now moves into a coaching role with the Australian-based team Orica Green Edge. So Robbie McEwen is gone, certainly not forgotten, and we will see him again. Thanks, Robbie McEwen, for all the years of professional racing. You'll be missed in the Lycra, but I have a feeling that you have a big role to play in the years to come in professional cycling. And the final race to report on, perhaps one of my favorites, becoming one of my favorites. You know, when I first got into road cycling and first got into becoming a fan of professional racing, like many people, the race that I knew the best was the Tour de France. But I got to tell you, as the years have gone on, while I still love stage racing and especially the Grand Tours in particular, I think that the one Grand Tour that has become my favorite is the Giro d'Italia. Cycling in Italy is varied. It is spectacular. It is brutal. And it is beautiful. And the Giro d'Italia shows all of that off so incredibly well. And this year was, well, it was no exception. From the initial stages where Taylor Finney, the young American, won the individual time trial in an exciting individual time trial and got to wear pink, and then lost it in a heartbreaking performance in the team time trial. Again, one of my favorite disciplines in stage racing. Through some of the battles with Mark Cavendish, the criticism of Ferrari for knocking Cavendish and the pink jersey down in a contested sprint, all the way through to the final time trial today. And of course, who can forget the climb of the Stelvio Pass yesterday, but to the final time trial today, where it came down to a battle between Spain's Joaquin Rodriguez, who was in the pink jersey, and Canada's Ryder Hegdahl from Team Garmin Barracuda. Hegdahl trying to become the first Canadian to not only win the Giro d'Italia, but to win a Grand Tour. And it came down to those final two riders when it became clear this afternoon that Ryder Hegdahl would and did become the first Canadian to win the Giro d'Italia, overtaking Joaquin Rodriguez in the time trial and winning by the slimmest of margins, just 16 seconds after 91 hours, 39 minutes, and 2 seconds in the saddle. It was Canadian rider Hejdal winning this year's 2012 Giro d'Italia over Joaquin Rodriguez. Rounding out the top 10, Thomas de Gendt, who also had a spectacular individual time trial today, just a minute 39 behind Ryder. In fourth place, Michele Scarpone. In fifth, Ivan Basso. In sixth, Damiano Cunego. Then followed by Rigoberto Urán, Domenico Pozzovivo, Luis Henao, and rounding out the top 10 from Euskaltel Euskadi, 8 minutes and 8 seconds behind Ryder Hejdal, it was Mikel Nieve from Spain. Today's individual time trial, by the way, was won by Marco Pinotti from Team BMC. And it should be noted that BMC won the first and the final stages, with Pinotti winning the individual time trial today and his teammate, American Taylor Finney, winning the first stage individual time trial. Now, Finney was, well, to say disappointed is an understatement in his performance in today's individual time trial. The problem was that while he was having a seemingly good race out on the road, he did not have a chance of winning when he was taken off course when the motorcycle, the pace motorcycle in front of him, took a wrong turn and led Taylor Finney off the course. Taylor Finney was quoted in Velo News as saying, "I don't think it's worth trying to estimate how much time I lost. At the end of the day, stuff happens," only he didn't say stuff, "and I've just got to move on. It's pretty disappointing. I was pretty angry at the finish." Now, Davis Finney, who's been on the Fredcast before, who is Taylor's father, said on Twitter, retweeting what Taylor had said, Taylor tweeted that he was taken off course by a lead moto in the time trial and had to turn around. He then said, "WTF Giro d'Italia, inexcusable." Davis Finney retweeted saying, "Bummed and angry to hear about the circumstances." So a bummer for Taylor, great performance by Team BMC, winning the first and last stages, and chapeau to the man from British Columbia, the first Canadian to win the Giro d'Italia, the first Canadian to win a Grand Tour. It's O Canada and Tim Hortons all around. Congratulations, Ryder Hejdal. And the last bit of race news, race results I have for you today, comes from the U.S. Pro Cycling Championships in Greenville, South Carolina, where Dave Zabriskie won his seventh national time trial championship and red, white, and blue jersey, and his second straight yesterday on Saturday, covering the 20.7-mile course in 40 minutes, 41.22 seconds, beating second place TJ Van Garderen's time of 40 minutes, 47.9 seconds. Coming in third was Brent Bookwalter. Fourth was Tom Zerbel. And fifth, Nathaniel English. There is one more event in this year's U.S. Pro Cycling Championships for the men, and that is Monday's 115-mile road race. Matthew Bushy will be there to defend his championship. We'll see what happens. I do have to say, and something that, you know, to be honest, I don't know everything, but one of the things that I certainly don't know is I don't understand why the U.S. Pro Cycling Championships are taking place at this time of year. I seem to recall that they used to take place somewhere around Labor Day, end of August, early September. And the good thing about that was that we weren't in this sort of time period where so many American cyclists are competing in the Giro, or just completed competing in the Giro, or just completed competing in the Tour of California, or are in their preparations for the Dauphiné and the Tour de France. So it just doesn't seem to me that this is the best time of year to do this if we're going to have the best American cyclist represented. Not to say that Zabriskie isn't, because it's clear that Dave Zabriskie is perhaps the United States' best time trialist. But it seems to me that And maybe you know the answer, and feel free to let me know and enlighten me. I just direct tweeted my friend Neil Rode to find out, or Neil Brown, to find out from him why it is that they do this time of year. It just seems to me there's got to be a better time of year to do it. But anyway, congratulations to Dave Zabriskie. And on the next episode of the Fredcast, I will let you know who won the Pro Road Championship for the 2012 U.S. Pro Championships. You will remember that on the last episode of the Fredcast, I told you about a contest we were doing with Jensen USA, where we were looking for listeners to send in their bar shots via Twitter. What's a bar shot, you ask? No, it's not the latest drink sensation. It is a picture that you take from behind your handlebars showing the area in which you are riding on that day. And we do have our winners. You remember that Jensen USA was giving out 10 $20 gift certificates to those who sent in the best bar shots. And we have our winners, and I'm going to tell you who they are by their Twitter names. B-Vay, that's B-V-A-Y, Charks, C-H-A-R-X, Joe Kerb, that's J-O-H-K-I-R-B, Sorn Toot, S-O-R-N-T-O-O-T, The Other Guy One, Bike Junkie, C. Robert P., ANJ0712 and Graham underscore MTB. But the grand prize winner, the one that just completely blew away the guys at Jensen USA, is Oregon Jones, who took a picture of himself from behind the handlebars, took a picture of a Peloton in traffic, and it appeared as if he was taking it with an iPad. So kudos to you if you're riding with your iPad, although I kind of have a feeling that you may have tweeted that from your iPad from your camera roll. But anyway, great pictures. Thank you to everybody who entered. If you go to thefredcast.com, you'll be able to see all of the bar shots that were submitted. I've got a blog post with a complete gallery of all the bar shots. Those of you who are winners, congratulations. I'll be direct tweeting you over the next couple of days with the information that you need to collect your gift certificate. We will have more contest with Jensen USA coming up in the next weeks and months. So watch out for those. But in the meanwhile, go ahead and check out the bar shots on thefredcast.com. Congratulations to all of you, and thanks to Jensen USA for sponsoring the contest. Well, you may recall in the last episode of the Fredcast, I did a review of two iPhone apps that are intended to keep your bikes safe when they're on top of your car and to help remind you that the bikes are up there so that you don't drive into your garage causing damage to your house, to your bikes, and of course, to your car. The two apps that I reviewed on the last show were Bike Saver and Rack Reminder. Quick follow-up, you may recall that I told you that I didn't feel that Rack Reminder was very consistent and that it was something that I could rely on. To be honest with you, I've since removed it from my phone, and what has remained on my phone and remained reliable and something that I'm planning on using from here on out is the Bike Saver app. I've been very, very pleased with the performance of that app. Now, you'll also recall that I said, hey, if I don't have an Android phone, and I know that there's an app called CarTop Alert available for Android that does essentially the same thing as these two apps that I reviewed for the iPhone. And I said, if you'd like, please send me in a review and I'd be happy to play it here on the show. And that is exactly what Scott did. Now, Scott has a little bit of a leg up here because he's got his own podcast and something that you might want to check out. It's called The Bike Shop Show. And you can find that at bikeshopshow.com. And of course, you can also search iTunes as well. And yes, of course, I've put a link in the show notes. Scott was kind enough to send along a link to his show where he did a review of CarTop Alert and let me know that it would be okay to play it here on the Fredcast. So without further ado, for those of you with Android phones who were teased by the last episode of the Fredcast, here's Scott from the Bike Shop Show with his review of CarTop Alert for Android.
If you are a regular listener or just a listener of the Fredcast, the great cycling podcast by David Bernstein, he just did a product review on show number 189, Bono's Bikes. And in that show, he reviewed iPhone apps, one called Bike Saver and one called Rack Reminder. Now, what these are basically little programs that run on your smartphone, and their purpose is to alert you whenever you are approaching your house or your garage, and you would set them if you have a put a rack on top of your car. As you all know, if you do use a car top rack, this is a constant worry. Anytime you put your rack on your car, you have to remember, you know, I can't pull into any driveway or garage or maybe some kind of parking structure, drive-throughs for whatever reason, toll booths, whatever. So, you know, it's a constant worry. And your home destination is one of the primary places that we forget. You come home so often that it's just a natural thing to just pull straight into your garage without thinking about it. So these programs are designed to give you an alert notice if when you approach your house or your garage. Now, David reviewed the two for the iPhone, but said he was not an Android phone user, which I am, and he suggested anyone, you know, review those and let him know. So the program that runs on Android is called Car Top Alert, and it does basically the same thing as the other two, and I went ahead and downloaded it and have been using it now for a little while. So, you know, I thought I'd throw it forward and see, give you guys my input on it. One of the things, I'll start with the negatives. I really only have a couple negatives about it. One is that there's only one alarm sound, so you can't set your own alarm sound. It's the bell ringing sound, so it is a pretty noticeable alarm sound. It, you know, when that bell sound rings, it's very noticeable. It pierces, like if you have your radio on in your car, it does pierce that pretty well. And it also, you can turn the vibrate on and off, so you can have it give an audio alert and a vibrate. You can have it give audio only, or you can have it give vibrate only. So that was kind of cool, but you can't set what sound it's gonna go off to. So that's a little bit of a negative. The other negative that I think is the biggest negative is that it only can be used with one location. This was a big positive of the other two, Bike Saver and Rack Reminder, that you can actually set multiple locations. So if you have a home and office, or say I'm going from my house and I'm traveling to, you know, Minneapolis to visit my dad, and, you know, I'm worried I'm going to pull in there and not think of it, I can set up his house as a second location for it to alarm. You cannot do that with Car Top Alert. You can basically set your home address, and that's it, and it'll alert you anytime you get near home. Now, that being said, those are you know, really only one negative. But in my opinion, the positives far outweigh that negative. For example, first of all, it's free, no charge. The other two programs, Bike Saver and Rack Reminder, I believe were 99 cents and $1.99. So Car Top Alert is totally free. Now, because of that, there is a small ad bar at the bottom. However, the ad at the bottom is very unobtrusive. I mean, the screen—it's such a simple program that the screen, the home screen, only needs about 2/3 to 3/4 of the screen anyway. So having a little ad bar at the bottom doesn't block you from seeing anything that you would have to scroll now to see or anything. So it's a very unobtrusive advertisement at the bottom, and I wasn't bothered by the advertisement at all, not one bit. So being free, I think, is a real good positive. Second positive I'll throw out there is it does run from the SD card, so that's very cool. I can slide it over to my SD card, doesn't take memory up on my phone, so I always like that in any program. The real big positive that I like, one of the real big positives that I like, is that you can set your own alert range. So I can set, if I want the alarm to go off a quarter mile from my house, I can set it off in any increment I want. Quarter mile, half, or quarter kilometer, half kilometer. I have mine set for half a kilometer most of the time because that works best in my where I'm at, and it worked beautifully every time. It alarmed at almost the exact same point every time I was coming home. No issues with the alert at all. And so very cool that you can set your alert distance to whatever is best for you. The other thing you can set is that I really, really like is how often the program is going to update its position via the GPS. If you, you know, want to save your battery, obviously, we all know GPS is, you know, can drain your battery. Not that I had that problem. I didn't have that problem at all. I didn't notice any difference in battery life. I do tend to have my phone plugged in my car. So, you know, it's really, really an irrelevant thing for me anyways. So you can set how often it checks the GPS to save your battery life. If it times out, if the GPS times out and it can't get a good reading on the GPS, it automatically switches over and gets the best position it can off the cell phone towers. So I thought that was a very cool thing that it had. Also, you can set it for continual GPS. So if you want it to just constantly be on your GPS and you're more worried about, you know, the accuracy of the GPS than anything, you can set that up. Again, if it be especially useful if you plug your phone in and aren't worried about battery life at all. The other thing that was a little bit tricky, not necessarily tricky, but kind of annoying, is if you set it, basically what this CarTop alert will do is anytime you turn the program on and you are within your alert range, the alarm goes off until you shut it off. So like if I was leaving my house, say, put my rack on top of my car, I'm going to leave my house, and I turn on CarTop alert, it immediately starts to alarm because I'm standing in my driveway. So, but what it does do is as I drive away from my house, as soon as I get far enough away to be outside my alert distance, it does go off. And then when I return to my alert distance, it goes back on again and alarms. So it wasn't, you know, a terrible deal breaker, I don't think. You just got to be willing to sit and listen to the, listen to the alarm for a few times as you drive away from your house, and then, you know, it'll alarm again as you get back. Or you just have to remember to set it whenever you get to your destination and you're on your way home, and then obviously it will only alarm as you get home. So overall, I give it a big, big thumbs up for a free program. I think it was great. It's basically, if you have no other system to alert you of your CarTop, this is a great option for free. I think it's a no-brainer to download and install and just use it whenever you think about it or whenever you have your CarTop carrier on.
Well, there you go. Great review of CarTop Alert from Scott from the Bike Shop Show. Scott, thanks so much for sending in that review. And hey, for any of the rest of you who'd like to appear on the Fredcast, you know, I would love to get your submissions. And of course, you can send those via email. Our email address is thefredcast@gmail.com. Or of course, you can use the Fredcast listener hotline. And that's area code 661-513-3733, 661-513-FRED. Now, if you'd just like to follow along with the Fredcast and with everything that's going on in the world of the Fredcast, you can follow me on Twitter. The Twitter handle is Fredcast. And of course, we're also on Facebook. So go ahead and check those links on our website. And the web address, if you haven't gotten it already, is www.thefredcast.com. Now, before I go, I'd be remiss if I didn't thank the show's sponsor. And of course, that's Jensen USA. Remember, they've got their Memorial Day sale going. And so if you're listening to the show and you are looking for anything from a tube to a complete bike or maybe a couple of complete bikes, press stop or okay, press pause. Go to your computer, go to JensenUSA.com/TheFredcast or go to TheFredcast.com and click the Jensen USA link on the right-hand side of the page. You will thank me for doing it because you're going to find an amazing selection, unparalleled customer service, and during their Memorial Day sale, even better prices than their usual amazing prices. Go ahead and check it out. JensenUSA.com/TheFredcast or TheFredcast.com and click the Jensen USA link on the right-hand side of the page. Thanks, Jensen, for your support, and thanks to you for your support of Jensen USA. And with that, there's only one thing left to do in this week's show, and that's to provide you with this week's PodSafe Cycling Music. And as you know, here on the Fredcast, PodSafe Cycling Music is brought to you by IndoorCyclingMusic.com, the home of the free weekly featured track and premium members content of weekly 30 and 60 minute cardio mixes and monthly 90 minute cardio mixes to get the world moving. Go ahead and check it out at www.indoorcyclingmusic.com. Apropos of this weekend here in the States, this week's PodSafe Cycling Music is a song by Jamie Beauchamp, or Beauchamp, you know me in pronunciations, by Jamie. The song is aptly titled Memorial Day. That's going to do it for this week's episode of the Fredcast. I'll be back in, well, probably just a couple of days with another episode of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks for staying subscribed. Thanks for telling your friends and teammates and club members and people at your nearby independent bike dealer about the Fredcast Cycling Podcast. Between this show and the next, enjoy the music, but most of all, enjoy the ride.